Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikitas.
Hello, and thanks for joining us here for episode 537. We got John C. Maxwell back with some more great stuff talking about how to develop and multiply leaders. You'll learn one, three simple questions that encourage growth, two, why training programs don't work and what does, and three, what the most beloved leaders do differently. So if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items we've referenced, it's at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep537 or expand the episode notes or description in your podcast app player here to do it that away. Now here's John's story. John C. Maxwell is the number one New York Times bestselling author, coach, and speaker who has sold more than 31 million books in five languages. He has been identified as the number one leader in business by the American Management Association and the most influential leadership expert in the world by Business Insider and Inc. magazine. He's the founder of the John Maxwell Company, the John Maxwell Team, Equip, and the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation, organizations that have trained millions of leaders from every country in the world. A recipient of the Horatio Alger Award, as well as the Mother Teresa Prize for Global Peace and Leadership from the Luminary Leadership Network, Dr. Maxwell speaks each year to Fortune 500 companies, presidents of nations, and many of the world's top business leaders. He lives in South Florida. Big thanks to John for sharing his wisdom with us, and big thanks to our sponsors. Check them out. Now, here's John. John, thanks so much for coming back to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
It's great to be with you, Pete.
Well, I'm excited to be chatting again. And first, I'm curious, did you end up getting some corkscrews made associated with the wedding gift?
I knew you were going to ask me that. Pete, I flunked. I love the idea. I'll tell you what, I love the idea. In fact, I told a couple of my team members, I'm going to do this, put it aside, and then just kind of forgot about it. Then you sent me, I don't know, maybe a couple of months ago, an email, and it jogged my mind. I thought, oh, I didn't do that. I sound like a procrastinator. I'm really not. But then I kind of forgot what you had on it. I know it was from the wedding feast at Cana. And I forgot, well, now what did he put on that? And I'm probably going to really ask you, could you get me one of those and I'll pay you for it?
No, well, you don't have to pay me for it. Thank you. I will. And I'm happy to. And you did not flunk. I imagine that you had a lot of high priority stuff beyond getting knickknacks engraved. And so you have written a bundle of leadership books and you're not done yet. You got another one here, The Leader's Greatest Return. Tell us sort of what's the big idea here and what made you think there's something that I have not yet said that needs to be recorded.
Well, this is, I think, a kind of an amusing story, Pete. As you know, 25 years ago, I wrote the book Developing the Leader Within You. And that book is what really put me on the leadership track as far as people looking at me and saying, this guy can teach me something about leadership. It was the first leadership book that basically came out that says you can develop yourself. Well, I followed that book up the next year with a book called Developing the Leaders Around You. Well, at the 25th anniversary, my publisher, HarperCollins, said, John, could you do a kind of a revised edition of that? And I said, well, I'd be glad to. So I went back and looked at Developing the Leaders Around You. And I'd written it 25 years earlier. And boy, Pete, I was so discouraged. To be honest with you, it wasn't any good. I mean, I looked at it.
Well, I think that's a good sign if you look at your prior work and are kind of disgusted.
Yeah, it's basically 25 years. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, oh, there's so little I knew back then and I've learned so much more. So I started revising the book, and on chapter one, I didn't take anything out of the first book to revise, so I wrote a new chapter. And then I went to chapter two, and I think I took one story and a quote, and that's it. Third chapter, nothing at all. By the fourth chapter, I realized I'm not revising a book. I'm writing a new book because I've just learned so much more about how do you develop leaders and people around you to get on your leadership teams, and how do you really multiply yourself by this process? So I called, HarperCollins, and I said, hey, let's just do a new book. And so we did. And I love the title, The Leader's Greatest Return. The reason I love that title is because I do believe it is any leader's greatest return is to develop other leaders. Because if you just have followers on your team, that's good. But and that adds. But if you really want to multiply, if you really want to compound, Pete, you've really got to develop leaders who can go out and then develop other people. Also, leaders build the organization and grow it. And so it is the leader's greatest return. And that's how the book got written. It was supposed to be a revised edition, but my first edition didn't make the cut for revision. So I just wrote a new one.
Well, this is fun in that the story of how the book came to be itself has some leadership lessons there in terms of the humility and the growing. And then I think in many ways that kind of puts you in a great, maybe feedback receptive mindset as a whole in terms of just as it's possible to look at something you've done yourself in the past and said, this could be a lot better. So too, is it possible to receive feedback from an outside source in the present and say, yes, indeed, it could be a lot better. And you may well agree, your future self, I guess, looking back.
You know, Pete, you're exactly right. It is a leadership lesson in itself. In the fact that as I look back on my past, I tell people, if you can look back even 5 years and be really thoroughly satisfied with what you accomplished or what you did, you just probably are not growing like you could or should be. Because for me, you know, the pages on a book never change.
And with that learning and growing, I'd love it if maybe you could highlight perhaps a lesson or two that you've done close to a 180 on in terms of, you know, I said this and I think maybe almost the opposite is closer to true.
Sure. Well, it happens all the time. I was being interviewed recently and somebody asked me what the greatest change in my leadership was. And I've gone through a lot of changes, again, because if you're growing, you're just always changing. And so, as I thought about it for a moment, I thought, well, you know, I think the greatest change I've had in my life is that as a young leader, I was very directional, kind of top down. And I always knew where I wanted to go, and I always had clarity and vision. So I'd say, okay, here's where we're going to go. Let's get on the team. And I'd rally the troops. And over the years, I realized that I was kind of leading by assumption. I was kind of assuming that everybody else kind of wanted to go where I was going and be on the team, which was not true at all. And so I began to slowly be less directional and start to ask more questions. And until today, it's a total change. Whereas I used to just kind of sit you down and say, okay, here's what we're doing and here's where we're going and let's shake hands and let's get going on it. And now I just ask questions continually. I lead by asking questions. In fact, I wrote a book, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago called Good Leaders Ask Great Questions. And really that was the catalyst for helping me and helping others know that really I lead now by sitting down with my team and finding out where they are. In fact, the statement I say is you have to find them before you can lead them. For years, I led them, or I wanted them to find me and get on the team. And so, yeah, it's a total change. But that's what happens when you grow. Every day I learn something new that I didn't know. But almost every day I've got to unlearn something that I embraced that just doesn't work anymore. Maybe it didn't even work when I embraced it, but I didn't know any better. And then I relearn. And one other quick thought on that, Pete. Every person needs to have a sense of teachability and learn not only from life, but to learn from others and let them speak into your heart and not only have an open door policy, but have an open ear policy. And through teachability and humility comes an awareness. And awareness is huge in a person's life. I need to constantly be aware of what I do well, what I don't do well, what I need to change. I was a couple of weeks ago, I was playing golf with Ed Bastian, who's the CEO of Delta. And so we're having a nice long leadership lunch afterwards, which was a lot better than the golf, trust me. And so Ed with, you know, here's this incredible CEO of a major company and very successful. Had a long-term relationship with him. But Ed said, you know, I'm always asking my people three things. What do I need to stop doing? What do I need to keep doing? And what do I need to start doing? And he said, those three simple questions just allow me as a leader to be aware and hear from others who really do know more and sometimes just you know, help me with my blind spots. And I thought, how that's just simple. Anybody can do that. What do I need to stop doing, start doing, and keep doing? And I thought, I just love that. But I think leaders are, the great leaders are continually growing, and they're continually growing because they want people to speak into their life, and they have an acute awareness of what they don't yet know, and have a great hunger to, you know, to learn and to get better. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so I'm right with you there. I think that totally adds up. And those are some handy, simple questions. So let's talk about multiplying leaders and how that is done. And maybe could you kick us off by sharing a cool story of an organization that has done this supremely well, like you've gotten to witness a transformation there?
Well, I think that there are some companies that really have done this very well, Pete. And I think Chick-fil-A comes to mind right at the top. And the reason I think they've done it well is because they have a leadership culture. And I think developing leaders begins with an attitude and an environment that is conducive for leaders to grow, to learn, to practice leadership. Now, the way that people are developed as leaders is they have to practice leadership. So there has to be a time in your organization or your life where you not only teach people how to lead, but you give them opportunity to lead, and you empower them, and you let them kind of run with the ball. And so I think Chick-fil-A just has such a leadership culture. They're constantly pushing their people to grow, to learn, to take on more responsibility, to have leadership experiences in their life. You know, it's very interesting. One of my nonprofit organizations, Equip, we really work hard on helping countries to be transformed through values. And we come in by the invitation of the president of the countries. We do it in little round tables of about 6 to 8 people. And so we're also doing it in schools. And, you know, we have about 1.5 million kids in junior high that are going through these values lessons in the curriculum. It's not before school or after school. It's right in the regular curriculum. So one of the great things that's happened out of this, teaching leaders how to lead and creating a leadership environment and culture, is that we have the kids do the facilitating of the roundtables, not the teachers.
Oh, cool.
So it's very peer-led. It's very peer-led. So I'm sitting with 5 of my schoolmates, and this lesson is mine. So I facilitate it and help them go through the material that's written there and ask the questions. And then, you know, next week, you know, Susan does that. And every week, we go around the table, and every student gets a chance to lead. Well, what are we doing? We're letting them practice leadership. And one of the side benefits I know that's going to happen to all these countries that we're doing this leadership teaching in the curriculum of schools is that they're going to find leaders. Leaders are going to find themselves. Kids in junior high are, you know, going to all of a sudden have a conscious awareness that I like facilitating. I like helping people and leading them through a lesson. And so anytime an environment lets people practice leadership, they are then creating leaders. And I think that's a very important lesson, because I think a lot of times we give assignments out but we keep the leadership reins. And I think that's not wise. I think, this book, The Leader's Greatest Return, is all about how do you empower people? How do you release them? How do you embrace them, even in their mistakes, as they learn to lead, until they really do understand what it is to lead? It's not a theory in their life. It's a practice.
All right. Well, so I totally buy that. That makes sense to me. And so then I'd love to get your view then in terms of, is it sort of just everybody all the time that we want to be engaging in leadership activities, or are there some particular means by which you try to identify a subsegment of folks that you want to invest more greatly into?
Yeah, I have a chapter in the book called, that basically says invite people to the leadership table, which is the culture where leadership is discussed and you hear other leaders talk about leadership things, issues. What I think on this, Pete, is that it's very essential to let everybody have a shot. And so, it begins by giving them more empowerment than what they would normally have at their job. So you take a receptionist, for example. I would sit with him or with her, and I would just sit to, and say, look, greeting people, coordinating appointments, et cetera, all this stuff is the key to this job. But I also want you to know that you probably have within yourself some leadership potential. And what that means is that you're going to be able sometimes to go beyond what a request is and be aware of perhaps a need beyond what's out there in that lobby. And it may come to the fact that you have to make some decisions. And what you do is I found that you teach a person how to do their job well. And then you start opening and broadening the parameters such as, okay, now that you've been out there as a receptionist for, a couple months, let's talk about the things that aren't working and the frustrations. And what I find is when they talk about that, almost always it's their inability to maybe make a decision that they have to go wait on somebody else to make or rely on someone else to make, or just some common sense thing that they could have or should have done. And so it's out of what's not working that you begin to get the playing ground for developing leaders. And so when they say, this person that came to for an appointment, they sat there for 30 minutes obviously there was a lateness to it. And so, let's talk about that. When somebody has to wait that long and we're having a little bit of miss on our side, what could you do that would kind of make it better for that person during that time? And maybe I go get them a cup of coffee. It's all this stuff. And so what you do that, and I empower you, go do that, and it's on the house. And it's that kind of leadership, development of people that lets them practice leadership, that lets them develop into leaders. Now, Pete, obviously there are some people that are just more gifted in this area than others. And so what happens is this, if you let everybody practice leadership, you very quickly learn the ones who perhaps have the highest aptitude for it. And that cream rises to the top. And now you're looking at somebody and you're saying, okay, you're a leader. Let me give you an example. In one of the countries we work in is in Guatemala. And so we did leadership training for the second largest bank in the country. They have about 10,000 employees. And so we did these values roundtables for all the employees. The bank said all of our people will go through values roundtables. So I was recently down there and the CEO asked me to speak to about 2,000 of their clients. So they bring in their business clients and the CEO said, let me just share with you what's happened since we've done these values roundtables. He said, three things have happened. He said, number one is he said, we've developed a leadership culture. And he said, what's happening is our employees facilitate the round table. And he said, where at one time we had to go looking for leaders, now they're popping up all the time. He said, we don't look for any leaders now. In fact, he said, we have an excess of leaders because we're seeing people that we didn't even know had leadership ability and they're facilitating these round tables really good and it's working. And then he said, because we in the values, we talk about integrity. He said, honesty and hard work has become part of the value system of our bank. And so our bottom line is better. And he said, the third thing is he said, they're taking these values home to their families that they're learning at work. And he said, it's changing their families. And I thought, how beautiful. But again, leaders were beginning to, arise on their own because they were given an opportunity to practice leadership. And that's real essential in developing leaders. You just don't develop a leadership culture without giving people that kind of empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Well, boy, there's so much in there that I really dig. It's funny when you talk about that story with the receptionist being empowered to get coffee and so on the house, like it can seem like a small thing, but I remember my first normal paycheck job in high school was working at Kmart in the pantry. They called me Pantry Pete. And I was so excited in the training videos when they talked about how as Kmart employees, we've got the power to please. And so I could, like, if we were out of the 24 pack of Pepsi, I could give them 2 12 packs at the sort of sale price. I just thought that was so cool, is that I had leeway to do something to make someone's life better. And they would be surprised and smile. And it felt awesome. It was like my favorite thing to do when I was working at Kmart.
That's a great example right there. And it's from there that you began. Leaders will they'll surface themselves, really. But they don't surface themselves if they don't have an arena to practice that leadership.
Mm-hmm. And when you talk about these roundtables, I mean, we don't need to go into every detail associated with how these are conducted, but I'd love it if you could give us just a bit of a rundown in terms of, so we got some values, we got some discussion questions, and different people are facilitating. What are some of the other kind of key things that are happening here that leaders might try to integrate in their own organizations?
Well, it's very exciting because in my EQIP organization, for a 19-year period, we just trained leaders around the world. And after 9 years or 19 years, we had trained 6 million people. And when that was complete, sat there and said, well, you know, let's have a party and celebrate, which we did. That's a pretty big accomplishment. And then I looked at them and I said, we're really not done yet. We've taught these leaders how to lead, but these trained leaders, there's another level of helping them become transformational. And transformational leaders bring positive change into people's lives. It's more than how to lead. There's a positive transformation that happens in people's lives, and that comes through learning and living out good values. And so I said, let's develop a transformational culture by teaching values, and let's do it in small groups, because that's where it happens, where you can have interaction, where you can hear other people's story. It's highly experiential, which is very contagious. And so we developed transformation. We call them transformation tables. We curriculum for adults, and we go into a country and we go to the top leaders. We go to the eight streams of influence, which is government, education, media, arts, sports, health, religion, and business, and we get permission from the top of those areas in a country to do these roundtables, and we call it the waterfall effect. If the top buys into it, it just flows all the way down through the company or the country. And so that's what we do. And our goal is, Malcolm Gladwell talks about the tipping point. So our goal is to get 10% of the people in the country in these transformation tables. And it's just phenomenal what's happening. We have, I think, 1.3 million now in roundtables, and it keeps just multiplying and growing. But when people learn good values and then they begin to live them, what happens is they become more valuable to themselves, and they become more valuable to their family and to their community. And there begins to be what we call a values lift in that community and in that culture. And so that's what we're going for. And again, it's all about developing leaders and helping them to do more than know how to lead, but to be people whose lives have been changed, which begins to create a contagiousness that other people want to have that also. So that's kind of what we do, Pete.
Mm-hmm. Well, a values lift sounds like a great thing that I'd love to see all around me. So could you maybe give us an example then of, all right, so here's what it might, you know, look, sound, feel like. Here's a value, and here's some discussion questions, and here's how that can really come to life for folks.
Well, for example, in Guatemala, that was the country we started first, then we're in Paraguay and Costa Rica, and then we have two more countries we'll launch into this year. But in these transformation tables, because the government is involved in it also, there was a table that the Attorney General was involved in. And so we're talking about values, and honesty, integrity are part of it. And she, doing the roundtable, felt that, you know, there was a lot of corruption and dishonesty in the government. So she went through one table, and then she facilitated the second table. And while she was doing that, she said, why am I facilitating this table when I'm, as an attorney general, not doing something about the government? So, to make a long story short, she began to prosecute people in government that were corrupt and try them in front of the Supreme Court. And 18 months later, over 300 of them were in prison. And
wow, that's
including the president. It's the only time a Latin American country has overthrown a leader because of because of corruption. And it just began to make a major change in the country. And it's, you know, that's a big example. I mean, the little examples, a mother of a son who was in prison, went to the training of the values table. And so she went to the warden and asked if she could do that with her son and a few of the inmates. He said yes. And so she started that transformation table with them. And there are 16 values that they go through over a period of time. And it just changed the seven or eight inmates, and they were sharing with their other inmates about what they were doing. And to make a long story short, in 2 years, all the inmates in the prison plus the guards were in these transformation tables, and it was going. It had come from a very kind of rowdy prison to kind of the model prison in the country because of what had happened. So again, it's a values lift. And again, it's creating a leadership culture, which, you know, the late leader's greatest return is that's what it's all about. How do you and I create a leadership culture to raise up other leaders so that we can have a compounding return on the things that we're trying to accomplish?
Mm-hmm. I'd love to get your take on, so within these transformation tables and these values discussions, it seems noteworthy just how fruitful this is and that things are really, you know, taking root. And I guess I'm thinking about Michael Scott in the TV show The Office and how they had an ethics seminar. And I guess, you know, that's just a comedy. But I think it's quite common that these kinds of messages can go in one ear, out the other. What do you think makes it stick in terms of like folks are really adopting it and doing some things differently in their lives?
But what makes it stick is that when it's more than a training program, it's that sharing around a table,
yeah,
that is experiential, that brings life change. So nothing happens in a company, Pete, unless the leaders are involved in the round table too. That's why we say you have to be in. I mean, the presidents of these countries are in these transformation tables. They're all in it. Because nothing's worse than being in a company. And so my level of we're having some training on leadership or whatever it is, and all the executives aren't there. It's kind of like, okay, you know, it's not that important or else they would be in the meeting also. And so you have to have what I call a connecting, identifying factor to make it stick. And that's why the tables do such a better job than a lecture. And I taught, that's why I devoted a whole chapter in The Leader's Greatest Return on the leadership table. And what's it like to have people sit around the table and be able to get into leadership discussion and hear leaders ask questions and hear leadership thought? This all is what allows people to begin to develop themselves as a leader.
Yeah, that sounds perfect. That's the connecting, identifying factor. And yeah. So when folks are sharing experiences over time, then, well, how big are these tables?
6 to 8.
All right, 6 to 8 people. So I guess the way I'm thinking about it there is like, okay, well, in your first session, maybe only one person is bought in and does something, and then they share it. And then by the next session, folks go, huh, that's kind of cool. Something happened there. All right, maybe this is worth paying a little more attention to.
Yeah.
And then you can just really get the juices flowing over time.
Yeah, the buy-in is in the process. You know, so they sit around the table with their arms folded the first time, saying, what are we doing here? And then when people begin to share and ask questions, it begins to get them involved. I mean, they're 6 or 8. You can't hide. If you're in a lecture hall, you can hide.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hide. And so pretty soon it comes to you, and you kind of got to do something about it. And then when you begin to see people having improvement in their life, it begins to be contagious.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned a concept I think is important. I want to make sure we give a few minutes to. So you distinguish between influence and control. Can you tell us, you know, what is that distinction and why is it important?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I teach that leadership is influence and nothing more, really nothing less.
You know, I quoted you in an interview once. Someone made me define leadership. I was in college.
Okay.
And I was doing like for the... campus rec department had some sort of like leadership team building roles. Like, I want that. And they say, how would you find leadership? It's like, hey, you know what? I'll take John C. Maxwell's. And they're like, all right. I got the job.
It's such a simple definition, but it's so right on. It, you know, leadership is influence. And the difference is, influence is if I have influence with you, it can either be controlling or it can be voluntary. If it's controlling, it's kind of like I'm the boss and I have a leadership position. And to be honest with you, Pete, you don't have any choice. You have to follow me. You follow me whether I can lead well or not. I mean, everybody listening to this podcast knows what it's like to have a bad boss. I mean, we all go back and say, oh, that was a nightmare. Well, why was it a nightmare? Because you had somebody in a leadership position that you had to follow that couldn't lead. But they had control. And so you never know if you can lead if people have to follow. I mean, it's like prison when the warden gets up and says, you know, there are 1,000 people here that came to see me. Well, they didn't have any choice. In fact, they'd like to break out if they could. So control is where I have no choice. The influence I'm talking about here is where I don't follow you because I have to, but I follow you because I want to. And why do I want to? Because you're a good leader, because you care for me, because you're trustworthy, because you're competent. And so, yeah, I want to be on your team, because if I'm on your team, life's going to get a little bit better. So when I think of influence, in fact, sometimes I'm with companies and they're saying, I've got 3 or 4 really key executives and I'm thinking about another leadership position and advancing one of the three. And they'll ask me, they'll say, what do you suggest as far as which of the three I pick? And I say, why don't you give all three of them a volunteer project? Let have all three of them go do something in their community that's pure volunteer and let them be in charge and just see how good they are with volunteers. Because if they can lead people who don't have to follow them, you've found a good leader. And that's influence. That's not control at all. That's not relying on titles or positions to get what I want. I mean, how many times we've heard the boss say, yeah, you do it because I said so. Okay. Oh, here we go. That's a great reason to do something. And so the influence that we talk about in leadership and the influence we talk about in the Leader's Greatest Return is influence based upon your ability to connect with people and make things better for them, not because you have a title or a position, which is control.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, so that is a nice distinction. And then generally speaking, how do you recommend we grow about being more influential in our colleagues' lives?
Well, because I teach that leadership is influence, people many times will say, well, then how do I, because it, if that's true, and it is, the question is, how do I increase my influence? Because the more influence I increase, the better I am at that, the more people I can lead. And what I always say, it's very simple. There's a very simple path to increasing influence, and that is intentionally every day adding value to people. And I encourage people to have this kind of a lifestyle that, you know, every morning, for example, in my life, every morning I ask myself one simple question. Okay, how can I add value to people today? And who am I going to see? I mean, I sat down early this morning. I went through the fact that I was going to be on a podcast with you, Pete, and the outside of the question of the wine court, outside of that, the question I wanted to ask is myself is how can I add value to Pete? Because you got a great podcast, you help an amazing amount of people, and you have a wonderful, wonderful work going. Well, I just want to add value to you. So that's very intentional. How, you know, what do I say? How do I add value to you? Every morning, I just look at the people I'm going to meet and the schedule I'm going to have and what can I do to help people? And in the evening, I ask myself the same question and, you know, who did I add value to today? How did I do that? And how can I do more of it? And it's being intentional in adding value to people that increases your influence. You show me any person in any person's life that adds positive value in a continual basis to someone. And I promise you 100% that person has great influence with that individual. Why? Because that person intentionally makes life better for them. And they become very endeared to you and you want to be around them. So that's how you increase influence.
And I'd love to get your view in terms of how can you add value. Now, in many ways, there's our thousands of different answers and ways that one can do that during the course of a day with the people that you're interacting with. Are there a few things that you notice that people can do just about all the time and they often don't? So how about start?
Well, I think it starts with valuing people. That's the baseline. So when I start talking about increasing influence by adding value to people, I don't talk to them about, first of all, how to add value to people. I just ask them a very simple question. Do you value people? Because if you value people, now you'll begin to have a leaning, a bent to adding value to them. If you don't value people, you know, you won't add value to them. I mean, if you kind of value yourself but devalue other people, no one's ever added value to somebody that they don't value it. It makes no sense at all. So, you know, we start with, do you value people? And if the answer is yes there, then we help them become very intentional. And we teach them every day, first of all, think of ways to add value to people. You know, look at your calendar. First of all, think of who do I have the chance to add value to? I mean, I know who I get a chance to add value to today. They're on my schedule. So think about ways to add value to people. Then when you're with them, look for ways to add value to people. And then every day, not only do those two things, but every day add value to people. Make sure you do some tangible action to where you can look and say, you know, I made that day better for someone else. And then what I do is I encourage others to add value to people. And it's just a continue adding value cycle. But foundational, it's foundational in leadership. It's very foundational. I tell leaders all the time, when you stop loving people, stop leading them. Good Lord, you're a disaster. You're gonna hurt a lot of people because everything rises at falls on leadership, and leaders that don't value people can cause a lot of harm. And so it's just very essential for that to be the core. If you truly value people, then you're going to learn how to increase your influence by doing these things I just gave you.
Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that mindset. I think some might say, oh my gosh, that sounds exhausting and I'm already overwhelmed with my own stuff. But then I think in practice, when I've been on a good hot streak of living that, it's actually much less stressful and more uplifting, energy giving, joy fueling to live that way.
Oh, of course. And I you know, it's a simple relationship course, but it just works like this. I mean, I can teach relationships in 1 minute. It's not complicated and it's very simple. I am either a plus in people's life or I'm a minus. It's just a fact. I'm every day either adding value to people, which puts me on the plus side, or every day I'm wanting people to add value to me, and I'm sucking energy and air from them. And if I'm constantly consumed about myself and making sure, hey, Pete, you know, boy, we're going to be together, I hope you do something that really good for me today. And my gosh, you know, and it's all about me. Almost always, I'm subtracting value from people. And, you know, it's a fact that I think most people who even are a minus and subtract value from people, I think most of them are even unaware. They just aren't aware that they are more concerned about what they reap than what they sow. You know, was it Robert Louis Stevenson said? He said, I consider my day a success by the seeds that I've sown, not by the harvest I reap. Now, that's an added value statement. And basically, he was saying, every day I just intentionally sow seeds. And because, you see, what he knew was very true, and that is the harvest is automatic. But sowing seeds is not. So you got to be intentional on the front end to get the fruit on the back end. And many people, they get up every day and they ask a simple question. I wonder what if something good's going to happen to me today. I wonder if somebody's going to be nice to me. And it's all about people adding value to them. If I am wanting people to add value to me more than I'm wanting to add value to people, I become a minus in relationships. And if I want to add value to people more than have people add value to me, I become a plus. It's that simple. And you just have to be that intentional.
John, this is great stuff. I think we're in our last couple minutes. Tell me anything else you want to mention.
Well, in the book, The Leader's Greatest Return, the reason I'm very excited about the book is there are a lot of leadership books out there, but there are very, very, very few books on how to develop other leaders. And there's a reason for that. Most people don't do it. 90% of all leaders don't develop other leaders. They just have followers. And the reason that they have followers instead of leaders is it's not easy to develop leaders. Leaders have a mind of their own. They're already in the game. And they don't just fall in line. And I wrote the book because the greatest return any person's going to have as a leader is not having, you know, a lot of followers. Because every time I develop another leader, it just begins to multiply and compound. And so I wrote a book, simple, practical, applicable, that a person can pick up and they say, okay, leading leaders, developing leaders isn't the easiest thing I'm going to do, but it's the most worthwhile thing I can do. My good friend, Art Williams, who started Prime America, has a great statement. He told people when they would join this company, he said, I'm not telling you it's going to be easy, but I am telling you it's going to be worthwhile. And this is what I wrote, The Leader's Greatest Return. It's not easy, but it's going to be worthwhile, and it's going to give you a huge return. I know that because for 50 years, I've developed leaders, and the compounding I'm having in my life now is ridiculously off the chart. But it's because I've consciously developed other people to lead and influence others.
All right. John, this has been a treat. I wish you lots of luck in all of your leadership development adventures, you know, nation to nation and group to group.
Thank you, friend. I so value you and what you do for so many people. You, Pete, you're a plus in people's lives. Your podcast adds value to so many, millions of people. And so it's always a pleasure to be with you and to hopefully add value to you and to your listeners. And thank you again for your help with my wine cork situation. But just thank you and blessings. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to do it some more.
Oh, thank you. Yes, you too. I love what John had to say about those groups associated with you take a topic and then you explore it in a small group. And then you have folks come back and share their experience with that. And over time, the momentum grows. And I think you could just apply that to, boy, just about any kind of transformation you're trying to apply in terms of living an organization's cultural values or trying to be more customer service friendly. We've heard this theme pop up in a number of times, and it's well worth considering. Maybe you can integrate some of that content into your regular recurring weekly meeting with the team and see how, if you want to get a behavior change, or you want something to take root and become alive, that could be a great way to do it. We think about it, we discuss it, and then we bring about life experiences, work experiences that are associated with living that thing. And so we all are enriched by the inspiration from other people doing it. I've done this with accountability groups, and it's just been pretty cool to see. So it's great to hear John has been getting some huge results, even on a national scale, when he is integrating that approach that way. So again, the show notes, the transcript, the links to items we've referenced, or at awesomeatyourjob.com/F537. If you haven't already, I hope you'll push subscribe. You'll catch our next guest, Robin Dreek. He used to work for the FBI, and he had to predict people's behavior and grow and build trust and persuade folks to commit treason. So he's got a few lessons to share about how we can build trust and be influential. Hope to catch you there. And peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend two key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice. If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.